Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my two-year-old toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie.
This week, Dr. Tony and Dr. Lisa are talking about why sleep is so important for perimenopausal mamas. And it can be a challenge. So we'll definitely talk about some tips to make sleep easier to get, because sleep is really crucial when it comes to our stress hormones and balancing our cortisol and just making us feel more happy, less stressed during the day.
Definitely. I think that's key. I know I feel more stressed out and anxious and easier to anger when I get a really bad sleep, whether it's because of me or if Stuart's up in the night.
Absolutely. You know, there's a reason why sleep deprivation is used as a torture technique, because it breaks us down mentally and it doesn't do great things for us physically as well.
Good point. Yeah, it definitely impairs everything. So even, yeah, your cortisol can get out of balance. So if you're not sleeping a good solid at least 6-7 hours, you actually release more cortisol the next day, even if you weren't presented with a stressful situation. And that gets our body in breakdown mode. So we're not building, we're not repairing, and that weakens our immune system too, because our body's basically just fighting for its life, running away from that tiger. So our immune system is not on its best or highest level of activity. So if you're exposed to a virus or a bacteria, you're more likely to get sick, because those white blood cells, those warriors in our body, are not going to be able to do what they're supposed to do. So as perimenopausal mamas, especially with young kids who may have trouble sleeping due to teething or illnesses, or just even in those first few months, they just can't settle down and get a good sleep on their own. You know, we definitely do get sick more often, and then that just impacts everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we get sick very more often, and also then a big problem that comes up when we don't get a good sleep on a regular basis is our metabolism and weight can go a little bit wonky.
Definitely.
Especially when there's the piece of our stress hormones, and when we have more stress hormones, and the cortisol actually has our body hold on to our fat, especially around the abdomen, especially around that midsection, that little muffin top, that can happen. So absolutely, when we're not getting a good night's sleep, there's more stress, there's more fat around the middle.
For sure. And I don't know about you, Tony, but when I don't get enough sleep, I'm definitely obviously tired the next day, but then my sugar cravings go up, and I'm not like a very, I don't have a high sugar craving level normally, but those nights where I get an interrupted sleep, I definitely want more dark chocolate, more sources of sugar, which I may reach for fruit, but it definitely changes my food cravings.
Oh, for sure. And you're not alone, Lisa. I think most people do that. And I think even, you know, the research shows that when you get 5-6 hours of sleep a night, you're going to be reaching for more kind of refined carbs, processed foods, those comfort foods that kind of make us happier. And then that absolutely has an impact on the amount of calories that you're taking in. I think I even saw that there was some research done that looked at people who only were sleeping 5-6 hours a night versus getting a good 8 hour sleep a night. And the hormones that impact your appetite will change. So there's your the hormone leptin, which tells your brain that you're full. It actually decreases when you get a poor night's sleep. And then there's the hormone ghrelin, which tells your body that you need to eat more, then you're not full. It actually goes up when you don't get a good night's sleep. So I think the research study was showing that with 5-6 hours of sleep a night, not only are you eating more refined carbs and processed foods, you're eating an extra like 200-300 calories a day, which definitely adds up over the year. I think they over the year can equal like an extra 10-15 pounds, which is not great, especially when that's around your middle.
Totally. So that can be the, you know, new mom weight gain that we see because sleep is definitely disrupted. The sugar cravings go up. And I've even seen studies to show with 5 or 6 hours of sleep, you actually can be pre-diabetic on blood tests. So your blood sugar levels are high, which then eventually they'll crash. And that's when you crave sugar and reaching for those carbs and sugar-laden treats. And yeah, it's pretty amazing what not sleeping can do to those hunger hormones. It overrides what our body actually needs, but we think we need that extra food because of the ghrelin, I like to call it the gremlin hormone that makes us want to eat more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's hard to get off of that vicious cycle of, you know, kind of blood sugar imbalance and craving carbs to get energy because you're tired, and your body craving more carbs as it's eating more carbs. It can be a tough thing to do.
For sure. I know ideally we would have the time in the day if we're tired because we didn't have a good sleep to have a short nap. It's not going to correct everything, but I've seen studies that it can help to repair the damage that has been done in terms of cortisol and blood sugar imbalances from lack of sleep. So definitely getting a little short nap, slowing down a bit if you can, and even doing some exercise can reset our stress hormones and our blood sugar levels. So even if it looks like a 10-20 minute nap, a 10-20 minute walk in the day, when you've had a really bad sleep the night before, that can really help, and you may not end up reaching for those extra carbs or sugars as well.
Absolutely. And it may not be something that makes sense to do when you're feeling tired is to go and exercise or move your body, but it's one of those things that can really help, especially to get a good night's sleep, you know, to be moving your body and burning some of those calories and working your muscles.
For sure. I know if I don't get some exercise, some movement in the day, my sleep that night is definitely not as good. So it's a feed forward response. It's like the chicken and the egg. You know, you need to get your exercise to sleep well, and to sleep well, like if you sleep well, then you'll want to exercise, but we might have to force ourselves a little bit, even if it's just a modified workout the next day after a poor sleep, but it can make a world of difference.
For sure. It can really help with really balancing mood and, you know, preventing kind of mood swings and low mood and anxiety. So not only getting a good night's sleep will help with that mental health aspect, but also then, you know, the exercise piece of it, moving the body too.
For sure. Yeah, definitely a natural mood booster with the exercise and the sleep. So I want to hear, Tony, how is your sleep as a perimenopausal mama? What's going on there?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, the past year or so has just been like, get sleep whenever I can. I've been thankful, I'm really thankful that I've been fortunate enough to, you know, have some days where I can really get in some naps. And when I'm putting Frankie down for a nap, I'm putting myself down for a nap as well. I'm really aiming for getting a total of at least 8 hours a day, even if it is broken up. Of course, it's not ideal. And it's like, you know, you do what you can when you're a mom. Now that Frankie is starting to sleep a bit better.
She's about a year now, right?
She is 13 months now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And now I'm really looking, especially doing this episode, I'm looking at my sleep and my sleep hygiene and kind of my bedtime routine. That's like, oh, I really could be supporting my sleep better, just because I've gotten into this almost rut, you could call it, where I know that I'm going to be getting up in the middle of the night. So I might as well just, you know, check my Facebook late at night before I go to bed, or do some work on the computer without, you know, really worrying about what the screen light is going to do. And we'll definitely talk more about that. So I know that I'm not setting myself up for the greatest sleep. And now that she's sleeping better, I'm definitely going to be taking that on more so that I'm not going to be interrupting my sleep unnecessarily as much as possible. And I can sleep when she sleeps, because that I find is a real key, especially in the beginning stages of being, being a mama, is like sleep when they sleep as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. It can be a challenge because you want to get a lot done and you're used to having a regular sleep schedule and being up when it's light outside. But yeah, I think it's so important to let ourselves rest, because sleep is the foundation for the rest of our health. So it sounds like you're doing a great job there, Tony, with sleeping when Frankie's sleeping. And hopefully the schedule is going to become more predictable, because that can be really stressful when, you know, the sleep hours are out of your control.
For sure. And I have to say, it wasn't always super easy, especially, I mean, sometimes you forget, but you think back and, you know, when Frankie was quite little, I'd try and go down for a nap, but I wouldn't be able to. My mind would be racing. So I'd really be, I'd have to listen to something. I'd have to listen to a meditation or some music, or even a podcast, just to be able to kind of shut down the brain and relax more. So,
For sure. Yeah. Finding that tool.
Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Lisa? How's your sleep been as a perimenopausal mama?
Good question. So it seems to always be changing. Like when Stuart was young, as I mentioned in the previous episodes, I was having sleep challenges, and also just due to waking up every 2 to 3 hours to feed him. So when he was finally sleeping through the night, I really tried to make my sleep schedule sacred. I'm almost a bit too rigid about it. I try to get to bed pretty early. I'm usually in bed around 9, 9:30 and up at about 5:30, so I can do a little workout at home in before he gets up. But you know, my sleep was looking pretty good at first, and then it started to shift and I was having trouble staying asleep. So I'd fall asleep because I was so tired from the day, and I'd get a solid, you know, 4 or 5 hours sleep. And then I'd wake up, either I had to go to the washroom or I just started to feel like warm and I'd have to take some of the covers off. But at that point, then my mind would start racing and I'd have a hard time falling back asleep. So I'd get a good solid chunk, 4 or 5 hours, but then get some mild hot flashes, start thinking, and then really not feeling like I was getting a deep sleep for the rest of the night. And my period, like we're with my period, my sleep is actually worse the 2 weeks before the period now. So I might even have trouble falling asleep. So it could take like 30 minutes, sometimes an hour. But then even like the few nights before I get my period, I might wake up after 3 or 4 hours of sleep and then be wide awake and actually have to come downstairs, make myself a cup of relaxing tea. I like either lemon balm or Tulsi tea or chamomile with lavender, and just read something so I could get my mind off whatever was going on, or journal for a little bit. So right now it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah. And I mean, that can definitely be the journaling piece, in terms of, you know, when you find thoughts are just kind of roaming around in your head and you're starting to get some monkey brain. Do you find that writing stuff down and journaling helps with that?
It does. I am like a regular morning journaler and a gratitude journaler, but it may be something I need to incorporate before bed. I do meditate before bed, and I'll share with you my favorite app for that. But that's a good point. I may need to journal a little bit later in the day just to process what's going on. Because as moms, we don't really have time to think. If we're working, if we're even just juggling the household, you're constantly going and doing, and you don't have a time to reflect on things. So I feel like when I wake up, you know, in the middle of the night, I'm actually just processing what's happened in the day, or, you know, remembering things I need to do. So I like that idea of journaling, before bed, even only for a few minutes. Like in the morning, I'll just take, you know, 5 minutes to do a gratitude journal. And then I do a plan of what I'm going to do for the day and what I need to accomplish, and really try to prioritize.
For sure. I find for myself, when I journal, I like to do it before bed, just so that it is a bit of a brain dump, to kind of, you know, I love the gratitude practice. Like, you know, I love kind of going through the day and thinking of the things that I'm grateful for and the great things that happened. And that's a really good state of mind to get into before bed too, but also just to kind of write down, okay, this maybe didn't go so well. And, these are some goals to kind of take on for the next day or, you know, the next week. So.
For sure. I really going to try to incorporate that. That makes sense. I think the meditation helps me to focus on my breathing and being in the moment and relaxed in my bed. But yeah, there's still those thoughts that need to be processed and taken out of my head.
Yeah. And then there's the piece of temperature.
Oh, yeah. Let's get into that.
As perimenopausal mamas, like, oh, we're dealing with some night sweats and hot flashes.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And the case is that the body does need to be cooler in order to initiate sleep and also even to maintain sleep. And it's funny because I even find myself just automatically, like, you know, putting on pajamas instead of really recognizing the research that's out there that's, you know, kind of the less clothing you wear, the better. And the cooler you can keep your room, the better sleep you're going to have.
Definitely. I saw somewhere, I think our body temperature is supposed to drop about 2 degrees. Well, that's probably pretty extreme, but at least like half to a degree to be in the proper zone to make enough melatonin, right? We need to have like a cooler body temperature so we make more of our sleep hormone melatonin. So I agree, Tony. Yeah, I used to bundle up. Like I would get freezing at night before having Stuart. And even in those early stages after he was born, I was really cold and then my temperature normalized again. But now it's like, okay, let me just wear the least amount of clothes possible. I've even switched up my comforter. So now it's like we use a really thin one. So it's not that heavy and warm. We set the air conditioner a lot lower. We turn on the overhead fan and even trying not to eat or drink too close to bedtime because that actually gets our core body temperature up as well. So then we don't get into that deep sleep or release the melatonin.
Definitely. You don't want to go to bed too hungry, but you also want to make sure that you have a kind of balanced blood sugar before you go to bed.
Yeah, I guess when I was breastfeeding, I had to have a snack right before bed or I would be
definitely
low blood sugar. So if you're breastfeeding, it's a totally different story with, you know.
That is a different story, absolutely.
And you got to hydrate with tons of water, no matter, you know, if it's right before you go to sleep. But now I find if I can give myself a window of about 2 to 3 hours where I'm not eating, I still have some water before bed and I may have a cup of relaxing tea, as I mentioned before. But as long as my dinner has good healthy protein and healthy fat and not too many carbohydrates and no sugar, then that'll keep my blood sugar balanced through the night. But yeah, if you're breastfeeding, you got to eat before bed, usually a nice protein snack, some nut butter on some apple or banana or something like that.
Definitely. Yeah. And you know, because adding in kids to the mix of managing your sleep is tough and, you know, breastfeeding or not, you do have to, be prepared to get up in the middle of the night. Cause you never know when they're going to, sleep fully through the night or be waking up crying or, you know, be sick or be teething or anything like that too.
For sure. Yeah. You have to be prepared. Definitely. And then, in terms of what symptoms people come with us as naturopathic doctors, when they're going through perimenopause, like, you know, we can talk about what that looks like in practice, how it's affecting sleep. So I see a lot of women coming in saying the same thing, like they just don't get a deep sleep. They don't feel as rested, whether they're, you know, waking up after a few hours and can't get back to sleep, or they just kind of in a light sleep all night, maybe due to hot flashes or thinking, the mind is racing. But those are definitely common concerns that I think both of us see in practice. Tony, do you have other complaints that people come to you in regards to their sleep during this transitional time?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it's so common to have kind of that light sleep and, you know, even if you're able to get to sleep, you have a, you know, a period of good sleep, and then you wake up, and then it's kind of a light sleep off and on kind of thing. And then it's about looking at, okay, what are some of those processes in the body? What are some of the hormones and other things going on that, mm-hmm. that will impact that? And of course, we talked about, you know, hot flashes, night sweats, and looking at, okay, what kind of balance of progesterone to estrogen is there that is kind of causing that issue. Again, absolutely, the stress hormone cortisol, you know, we talk about it all the time as naturopathic doctors, because also not only will cortisol impact the sleep, but then cortisol can also impact that progesterone estrogen balance that can, you know, lead to more of those hot flashes and night sweats too.
Definitely. Yeah. It's a big problem in our society. We're trying to do too much. Mm-hmm. We're burning the candle at both ends. Our body, absolutely. Unfortunately pays the price. Like you said, Tony, we make more cortisol, the stress hormone. So then we can't make as much progesterone because they use the same building block. And progesterone's our calming, relaxing hormone that helps us with sleep. Estrogen can start to shift in perimenopause. It can actually get high. It can actually get high, or you have the bad types of estrogen, which makes your progesterone even lower. But estrogen can be all over the place depending on the time of your cycle too. But low progesterone can contribute to the hot flashes as well as not having that deep sleep that you really need as a mom.
Definitely. And there is that piece of, you know, that I have the conversation with moms about our expectations of, are we trying to do too much during the day, or especially in the evening when the kids are in bed? Mm-hmm. You know, talking to moms about, okay, you know, they want to clean up and they want to, you know, get some work done. And then they also want to watch a show on TV and, you know, and be with their partner and all, you know, it's like, okay, you're trying to do like four or five things in a maybe 1 to 2 hour window, which then is extending your day, which is then creating some sleep deprivation from, you know, to happen. And the more that you try and do during the day or in the evening, when you're doing those things, whether you're watching a screen or when you're cleaning or anything, that can increase your cortisol. And that higher cortisol will prevent your melatonin from being released. So that will definitely impact how you're able to get to sleep and stay asleep as well.
Really good points, Tony. Like before we had Stuart, it was amazing how much I could accomplish in the day. I probably pushed myself too hard, but you know, I had the time to do it. But now time is so limited, and really something has to give. We have to give up something, whether it's the dishes are going to be left in the sink overnight. We're not going to be able to watch our favorite show that night because we have to start our relaxing bedtime routine, even if it's only a, you know, 15, 20, 30 minute relaxing routine before bed, because we know that's going to help us sleep better. You know, something definitely always has to give as a parent. So it's a trade-off, right? Am I going to watch my show, or am I going to get a little bit more sleep and feel even better the next day?
Absolutely. And for me, it's usually, I'm just going to leave the dishes in the sink and let, you know, take care of those tomorrow. And I'm going to do other stuff that I want to do and enjoy doing.
Definitely. We need to pick what's the most important to us. And even just as a side note, if you are watching TV before bed, the blue light on the screens and even your computer and your phones impacts your melatonin production. So it makes your body think it's daylight. So you're not going to produce melatonin, the sleep hormone. So there's a couple of ways to navigate that. Obviously, the first one being avoid screens, but for a lot of people, that seems really difficult and they're not going to do that the hour before bed because they might use TV to unwind. But you can buy blue blocker glasses. So even off Amazon, there's really cheap ones, the Uvex Skyper orange goggles. They're very attractive, let me tell you, but they block out that blue light. So the screen does look different, but at least your body's going to make some more melatonin as well. And then you can use different software to download on your computer or your phone to make the screen dimmer. But just the stimulation of the screens and the TV, as Tony mentioned, can really increase that cortisol level too, which is also going to impact your melatonin production, progesterone production, and even your body temperature. So you're not going to sleep that well.
For sure. And especially, I mean, if you want to unwind by watching a show, I mean, think about what kind of show you're going to watch. Are you going to watch kind of one of those scary crime dramas that's going to kind of, again, get those stress hormones going? Or are you going to watch something like a funny show that's actually going to lower your cortisol as well? So that's something to always keep in mind too.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, the funny shows, like you said, it lowers cortisol, Tony. And then it also makes us make more serotonin, the happy hormone, which is in the same, the same production pathway as melatonin. So it can actually boost your sleep. So that's a really great tip, Tony, to watch something funny. Whereas, you know, if I try to watch Homeland, which I love, I get so sucked in and I'm stressed out and I can't calm down and fall asleep. So everybody watch something funny if you're watching TV before bed.
Absolutely. Something that we haven't talked about yet, Lisa, is alcohol. Yeah, you know, I know probably a few of us like to have a glass of wine or maybe a cider or a beer in the evening. I mean, yes, alcohol is relaxing, but it does impact your sleep. It reduces the body's ability to get into a deep sleep and actually kind of blocks and disrupts your REM sleep, which is your dream sleep. That's when our bodies take new information and combine it with old information. And it's, you know, a really great time for our brains to do some problem solving and really process stuff. So, you know, when you're drinking on a regular basis in the evening, that's going to be impacted.
For sure. I find, yeah, people do better if they're having a glass of wine or a cider to have it with their dinner. If you have alcohol on an empty stomach, it's definitely going to impact your sleep more negatively. And then obviously the amount of alcohol. So limiting it to 1 to 2 at the most, and ideally not every night, maybe just on the weekends if possible, or a few times a week, but really finding that sweet spot for you. So you have a, you know, a way to unwind without doing damage to your sleep or to the rest of your body. And that's where I like the calming, relaxing teas as well, like the lemon balm, the Tulsi tea, and the chamomile and lavender. You know, granted, you might have to get up and pee, so you don't have to drink a whole mug, but you can steep it for about 20 minutes and drink half of a mug of the tea. And that may be a good way for you to unwind instead of, you know, reaching for the glass of wine or cider, which, you know, does have a really good relaxing effect in the moment. But if you overdo it, you might pay for it later and actually feel more anxious the next day.
For sure. And it's not like you... I mean, maybe it is a better idea to abstain completely, but do you absolutely have to? You know, not necessarily. I would say, you know, pick and choose the times that you're going to enjoy a drink. And you know, like you said, Alisa, you know, the more you can have that drink during dinner or earlier in the evening, then the less impact it can have.
For sure, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then looking at what, you know, if you're having alcohol too, that actually makes you urinate out more magnesium, B vitamins that you need to balance out the cortisol levels. So it just feeds forward in a negative way as well. And then I don't know about you, but if I have some wine, especially with red wine for some reason, which I really like, if I have, you know, 2 glasses or a little bit more, then I might get more hot flashes that night. So I feel warmer. You're sweating out the alcohol almost. So that can impact your sleep in that way.
Absolutely. You know, if anyone out there is having regular hot flashes or night sweats, really looking at your alcohol intake and, you know, really looking at a period of not having any alcohol can really make a huge difference.
Definitely. So it may be worth it to reduce or avoid it if you're getting really, really bad hot flashes.
Definitely. Especially because when we're looking at our sleep and, you know, how, if you're not getting a great sleep, how it impacts, you know, us personally is, you know, it doesn't feel great, you know, when you're more tired, more cranky. But then it definitely has an impact on family. And, you know, I think of the days when I don't get a great sleep the night before, I'm really not a great mom or partner to my family.
I don't think you're alone with that, Tony. I agree. Yeah, because I become more snappy and short. I don't have as much patience if Stuart's having a little tantrum or challenging me on some issues. And then afterwards, the mom guilt kicks in. And then that may affect my sleep the next night because you're thinking, oh, I should have done that. I shouldn't have done this. So yeah, we definitely need as moms, anyone, but as moms, when you're helping to raise healthy kids, that needs to be a priority as much as possible. You know, it's not going to be in our control all the time, but setting up a routine and really trying to get it when you can as a new mom.
For sure. It's funny because I saw some research where they looked at employees rating their bosses or their CEOs and rating how charismatic they were. And they saw that when CEOs actually got less sleep, they were rated as less charismatic. So it made me actually think, oh goodness, when I get less sleep, how charismatic is my partner and my daughter rating me? I don't think I'm a very charismatic mom when that's going on.
Well, Tony, you have a lot of charisma to go around. So, you know, your 10 might go down to an 8, whereas someone might start off with a 5 and then they're in big trouble. So,
oh, gee, thanks, Lisa.
anytime. So we forgot to talk about one important thing that can impact our sleep, or another important thing, caffeine. So what do you think about caffeine, Tony?
Oh my goodness, yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny because I personally don't have a lot of caffeine. I've never been a coffee drinker. I've never been really like the taste of coffee. And so if I'm going to have any caffeine, it's going to be some green tea or maybe a little bit of chocolate. But I mean, definitely, and this is where everyone's a little bit different in terms of their caffeine. I know personally, I do not metabolize my caffeine very quickly. So if I am going to have any caffeine, it's absolutely going to impact my sleep. So I really keep it to a minimum and keep it to very early in the day. Whereas other people are fast metabolizers of caffeine. They're the kind of people who can have a cup of coffee, say in the afternoon or in the evening, and it doesn't impact their sleep as much.
I know that blows my mind when people can do that because I'm a slow metabolizer too. So like you, Tony, I have one tea in the morning. So black tea or green tea. I might have a decaf coffee as well. That does have a little bit of caffeine, but hardly, you know, much compared to a regular cup of coffee. But then I do like to have a little bit of 80% dark chocolate after lunch. That's my treat. So I really savor a small amount of good quality chocolate. But if I have anything later than the chocolate right after lunch, my sleep is going to be impacted. I'm either not going to fall asleep as easily, or I don't get into as deep of a sleep or stay asleep as long. And there is some research to show it does affect caffeine, affects a substance called adenosine that we produce. So it's a brain chemical, a brain messenger. We're supposed to accumulate levels of adenosine as the day goes on. And this makes us feel, you know, more drowsy and tired and ready for bed. But if we have caffeine, it actually impairs that adenosine production to make you more awake. So it sets back that cycle. So you're not going to be as drowsy and ready for bed when it comes time to go to sleep.
Yeah. I remember I've had times when, you know, maybe I've indulged in some, maybe a large amount of chocolate in the evening, and then I'm sitting in bed wondering why I can't fall asleep. And that's exactly why.
For sure. Yeah. So I've actually just bought some carob powder, roasted carob powder. And yesterday I was craving a bit of chocolate in the afternoon, and I made this like chocolate drink, if you will. So it was some carob powder, some hemp milk. I put it in the blender with some ice and I put a bit of stevia in it and blended it up, and it was delicious. So I felt like I was having some chocolate milk, but carob powder does not have any caffeine or any chocolate in it. So if anyone wants a little tip for something to satisfy that chocolate craving, check out carob powder and carob chips as well. You can find a lot of recipes online.
That sounds awesome, Lisa. I love that. So let's kind of break down what would be kind of ideal bedtime routines that would really maximize our melatonin release, minimize our cortisol, and really improve our sleep quantity and quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good thing to cover. In an ideal world, if you're not breastfeeding, you know, having dinner 2 or 3 hours, you know, at the latest before bed. And if you're having alcohol, just limiting it to one glass. And then the hour before, and trying not to exercise too late either can make a difference. I like to exercise in the morning. It works better for my schedule and how I feel in the day. But you don't want to do too strenuous of exercise too late, because that's going to increase that cortisol too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then after that, limiting screen time the hour before bed. But if you are using screens, then to wear those blue blocker glasses or use some sort of software to reduce that blue light exposure. And then for myself, I like to, we do watch some TV, but it's more relaxing or funny shows. Right now, I'm really liking, well, Pete and I are really liking Life Below Zero on Netflix. It's about living in the Arctic. It's a reality show. And I just find the scenes of nature are very relaxing, and I almost like fall asleep to it on the couch while I'm wearing my blue blocker glasses. I may have a relaxing tea depending on how I'm feeling that day, and then I do a 10-minute meditation before I go to bed, and the screen is really dim and I try not to look at the screen too long on my phone. But I find that's a really good routine, and I may take some passion flower or melatonin, magnesium before bed depending on what I need. And of course, you know, if you're going to take any of these supplements, make sure you check with your healthcare provider. But Tony, what do you like to do for a bedtime routine? What works for you?
You know, I like to kind of even go through the next day, kind of quickly do, you know, things that I need to do. So again, kind of a little bit of that brain dump so that I'm not finding myself waking up and kind of thinking about things. Yeah, you know, turning off the screens as much as possible, but, and even like turning off some lights, you know, keeping the lighting in the house more dim, just to really get our, get into the mood of relaxing for going to bed. Big fan of magnesium as always. So definitely taking some magnesium at night. And, you know, getting into bed, you know, that's where something like journaling or even reading. And this is where like actually reading a book and not a screen is something that I like to do. Actually having a physical book with paper pages in my hands can be really nice. And I find, you know, even just reading a couple pages just, you know, gets me nice and relaxed.
For sure. Yeah, there's something to be said about a book versus a screen versus a Kindle. So that sounds like a great way to unwind before going to sleep.
Definitely. And, you know, everyone needs to kind of find what's going to work best for them and what's going to, you know, be the timing that's going to work as well for, you know, you and your family too. So that's important to kind of, you know, play around with it and see, you know, what are the pieces that are really important for, you know, your best sleep.
For sure. It can be a work in progress, and through the different seasons of our life, it may change. Like if you're breastfeeding, it's going to change. If you're not breastfeeding, depending on your work schedule. So really, if it's not working, just trying to make shifts and adjust it and see what will work for you.
Absolutely. So now is time for the super mom moment of the week. I'm going to take this one for the week. I'm going to let everyone know that my super mom moment this week, maybe I didn't necessarily do anything to get it, but Frankie slept 11 hours straight this weekend.
Woo woo!
It was amazing, and it was almost a little scary because I was like, she's still breathing in there. What's going on in there? But it was amazing from 8 p.m. until 7 a.m.
Woo! You deserve that, Tony. It's so tough during the first year, and it could extend longer for some people as well. So fingers crossed this is a trend moving forward and you'll get a solid night's sleep back.
Fingers and toes crossed, Lisa.
Love it. Well, since you're doing such a good job, I'm going to share one of my mom mess ups. So this was actually after a night of sleep deprivation. It was more due to the time of the month for me, nothing to do with Stuart getting up for any reason, but I was feeling a little lethargic, a little out of it, and it was time for daycare drop-off. So I usually let Stuart bring a key as we walk over to daycare. He likes to pretend to lock the door, so he'll do it first, and then I'll do it after. So he grabbed his key, and I put it in my pocket, and I went to go out the door, and my husband was still home, Pete. So he was going to lock the door behind me. So I put my hand in my pocket. I'm like, oh yeah, I have a key. I'll be fine. Yeah, if you don't mind locking the door, Pete, that's great. So I took Stuart to daycare. I walked him there, walked him back. It's just a 2-minute walk. Came back and the door was locked. I got out my key and realized it was the toy key. Well, it was an old key that we had that I usually give to Stuart to use. And it was not going to work, of course. So my key was locked in the house. So I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? My husband had already left for work. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have any money. I didn't have anything on me. So I went back to the daycare provider, and she was nice enough to lend me some money so I could take the subway to go surprise Pete at work to get the house key. So that threw, you know, a wrench into my day, but I actually handled it really well. So that may be a super mom moment in this mom mess up, because I just remained calm and I said, you know what, this will give me a chance to read the local paper, the free local paper, sit back. I had a little bit of extra money, so I bought myself a nice tea. I tried to enjoy that time and just take it slow. But yeah, sleep deprivation can make you do some strange things. I'd never done that before. So that's my mom mess up.
Great learning experience. And Lisa, you took it like a champ.
Thanks, Tony. Now, Tony, I want to hear, what's your mom must have this week?
Now, my mom must have this week, you know, we were talking about how lack of sleep can impact the immune system. You know, also kids in daycare or day homes can definitely impact our immune systems as a family. So I find that a real must-have for my family right now is having echinacea on hand. You know, it reduces the chance of a virus replicating in your body and really helps to support your immune system to fight off infections. So I've been taking it regularly because Frankie's been having a few colds here and there, especially with teething, and it's really come in handy.
Amazing. Yeah, that can definitely be a lifesaver. And for people out there that, you know, have experiences where it may not work for them, you have to make sure you're getting the right part of the plant. And you, if you're taking it in a liquid form or a tincture form, you really want it to have that tingling on your tongue that shows you the active ingredients are in there. So, you know, talk to your healthcare provider to figure out which one is the best, and making sure it's safe for you as well is important.
Definitely getting a good quality echinacea and making sure that it is right for you is definitely an important thing to do.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it definitely can be a lifesaver if you can prevent those illnesses, Tony. That's awesome.
Yeah. How about you, Lisa? What's your mom must have?
Oh yeah. So I was going to bring up the meditation app I just talked about. So it's called Insight Timer. So it's actually free if you download it off of iTunes. They do have a paid feature, but I find there's so many meditations on the free one that I haven't needed it. And you can search by amount of time you want the meditation to be, a keyword. So I'll just search for sleep, and then I'll schedule it or pick like a 10-minute meditation and listen to that. So there's one I'm really liking called Deep Sleep, but there's also really good progressive relaxation ones too, where you're tightening and relaxing different parts of your body, also known as Yoga Nidra. They have various time amounts for those as well. So the Insight Timer app is really great. You can check that out, and it's a great way to help you fall asleep and just clear your mind from the day.
That sounds awesome, Lisa. That sounds like a great, free apps are always great things to have.
For sure. I hope they don't start charging for all of it, but that one's working for now. So
that's awesome. And that's, you know, another great tip to help you perimenopausal mamas get the sleep you need, you know, aim for those 8 hours. And again, it's all about doing your best too.
For sure. So really get your rest when you can, even if it's sleep when your kids sleep. And hopefully some of these tools will help you get that deep sleep so you can go out into the world and raise healthy kids and feel your best.
Awesome. So with that, we have to say goodbye for now. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great day. Have a great week.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.